That picture of her today, I don't know how many times, first time I noticed the black mark on the red boat. Means it was taken after a home. Long time you got a black on the red. Nice email from a young man who's interested in domestic life, 20-year-old in the U.S. Sent me unsolicited a list of his 10 desires. Don't know what his 10 desires are? It is my desire to know God. It is my desire to worship God. It is my desire to serve God. It is my desire to serve God's creation. It is my desire to mingle with holy company. It is my desire to bow before the Guru's feet. It is my desire to do his will. It is my desire to renounce the past. It is my desire to renounce myself. It is my desire to renounce my desires. All 10 of them. That was sweet. So I sent him back a note, a quote from Gurudeva on Hinduism. No other faith boasts such a deep and enduring comprehension of the mysteries of existence, or possesses so vast a metaphysical system. The storehouse of religious revelations in Hinduism cannot be reckoned. I know of its equal nowhere. Contains the entire system of yoga, of meditation and contemplation and self-realization. Nowhere else is there such insightful revelation of the inner bodies of man, the subtle pranas and the chakras, or psychic centers within the nerve system. Inner states of superconsciousness are explored and mapped fully in Hinduism. From the clear white light to the sights and sounds which flood the awakened inner consciousness of man, in the West, it is the mystically awakened. In the West, it is the mystically awakened soul who is drawn to Hinduism for understanding of inner states of consciousness, discovering after ardent seeking that Hinduism possesses answers which do not exist elsewhere, and is capable of guiding awareness into ever deepening mind strata. Isn't that beautiful? That's really nice. Long statement on Hinduism from Gurudeva. So I ran across the mission of the mission recently. Gurudeva put everything in the trilogy, even instructions to the monks, just so we wouldn't lose them, wouldn't forget them. Have to read them once a year at least. So this one's from Living with Shiva. The mission of the mission. The legacy of Devas from the entire parampara accompanies our monastic order, providing silent, unseen inner guidance and The legacy of Devas from the entire parampara accompanies our monastic order, providing silent, unseen inner guidance and protection to old and young alike. As long as at least one person within the entire group of Madhavasis is going into and coming out of Parashiva once a day, the doorway to the third world remains open to the hereditary entourage of demonic forces that has been building up for over 2,000 years. So that's a very interesting statement. Shows the importance of striving to realize the self, certainly, because it's saying the whole key to holding this parampara inner lineage of beings is a monastic experience in Parashiva. And that the demonic forces have been building up for over 2,000 years. This is because the Brahma Brahmarandra, the door of Brahman at the top of the head, remains open when Parashiva is daily experienced within a Matavasi community. It could be within the oldest monk or within the youngest. This great realization occurring time and time again within someone day after day keeps the door of Brahm open for the entire Brahma Chakravala of monastics, keeping vibrantly strong the inner actinic connection with all gurus of our parampara, as well as with other sadhus, rishis and saints who have reached these same attainments, and with the Sapta rishis themselves who guide our order from deep within the inner loka. And Gurudeva goes on talking about swamis and sannyas. My Saiva swamis or Nada swamis are distinguished by their orange robes, gold Nada earrings, and three strands of Rudraksha beads. They are the Saiva Siddhanta Yoga order known as the Saiva Swami Sangam when they gather in ecclesiastical conclave. Sangam does not follow the protocol of unanimous decision. Rather, it works in intuitive one-mindedness to carry out instructions from the Kailasapidam, our spiritual seat of authority, to better the Saivite mission and the individuals dedicated to its success. These sannyasins are not looked upon as individuals so much as an integrated council, assembled and working in unison to perform a holy work, Sivanadiyaras, servants of God Shiva. Guided by the Satguru, the Saiva Swami Sangam forms the ecclesiastical body of our Hindu church, which works in a humble way to protect the purity of the faith among all Hindu sects through inspiring publications and other means of encouragement. Specifically, our order's mission is to protect, preserve, and promote the Saivite Hindu religion as embodied in the Tamil culture, traditions, and scriptures of South India and Sri Lanka. The monastic order follows a cenobitic pattern in which monastics live in community, work together toward common objectives. Sannyasins of this order are not wandering sadhus or silent contemplatives, known as anchorites. Rather, they are members of a brotherhood working closely and industriously with their satguru and with their brother monastics. At the time of sannyasa diksha, each has accepted the mission of the Kailasa Parampara as his own, to protect and perpetuate Saivism, to serve Hindus the world over, to provide, teach, and disseminate scriptures, religious literature, and practical instruction, to promote temple construction, and to exemplify the dignity and enlightenment of our Nandinava Sampradaya. Living under lifetime vows of renunciation, humility, purity, confidence, and obedience, these sannyasins are bound to fulfill their unique role in the Saiva culture of religious exemplars and staunch defenders of the faith. Their ideal is to balance outward service, sivathondu, and inward contemplation, realization, sivayana, for a rich, fulfilling, and useful life. Well, that's a beautiful statement. It reminds us all of what we're doing here for these families and those preparation for something else. Well, last phase we read the definition of moksha, which is moksha comes when earthly karma has been resolved, karma well performed, and God fully realized. So one of the lessons that went by in the last week was appropriate development of that. Dancing with Shiva Sloka 50. Should one avoid worldly involvement? The world is a bountiful creation of a benevolent God who means for us to live positively in it, facing karma and fulfilling dharma. We must not despise or fear the world. Life is meant to be lived joyously. Om Namah Shivaya. The world is the place where our destiny is shaped, our desires fulfilled, and our soul matured. In the world, we grow from ignorance into wisdom, from darkness into light, and from a consciousness of death to immortality. The whole world is an ashrama in which all are doing sadhana. We must love the world, which is God's creation. Those who despise, hate, and fear the world do not understand the intrinsic goodness of all. The world is a glorious place not to be feared. It is a gracious gift from Shiva himself, a playground for his children in which to interrelate young souls with the old, the young experiencing their karma, while the old hold firmly to their dharma. The young grow, the old know. Not fearing the world does not give us permission to become immersed in worldliness. To the contrary, it means remaining affectionately detached, like a drop of water on a lotus leaf, being in the world but not of it, walking in the rain without getting wet. The Vedas warn, behold the universe in the glory of God and all that lives and moves on earth. Leaving the transient, find joy in the eternal. Set not your heart on another's possession. So that develops that idea quite nicely. Also mentions one of Gurudeva's important themes, life is meant to be lived joyously. And I always like to mention that a few times a year, just to remind us. Sometimes we get too serious, don't laugh enough, smile enough, but that's not what's intended. Those of you who've heard me say it before, remember I distinguish between being serious and being somber. Somber is you never smile. Because we're pursuing something serious, which is sadhana. It's not going to smile. We can be serious, meaning trying to live a strict life, without being somber. They don't have to go together. So that's where Gurudeva spirit, as nicely shown in our photo up there. It certainly doesn't look somber. Life is meant to be the direction. So it's something we were talking about in our classes on meditation. Claiming our state of consciousness, that's part of the idea. If you haven't studied consciousness and awareness and haven't given much thought to meditation, then the states of consciousness we experience during the day are very much subject to how the world is treating us. If someone is treating us poorly, giving us a bad time, or we've lost things and we can't find them, or we've lost a computer file we spent a week creating, you know, whatever, we tend not to be joyous. But there's no reason not to. No matter what's going on in our life, our state of consciousness doesn't have to be dependent upon that. So if people are treating us well or people are treating us poorly, if the day is going well or poorly, we really don't have to let that determine the state of consciousness we're experiencing, which is what lots of people do. They're just subject to whatever happens during the day, makes them happy or sad. But Gurudeva's approach in Shu meditation is to claim an independence. Gurudeva used to come in the morning in the temple here, and the first word he'd say was, Vihai Shu. Reading, but it also means contentment.
always think of that in the morning when I get up. And I say, am I content? Yes. Just claim it. You know, just it's a state of consciousness you can claim. You don't have to say no. You know, just find the state of mind which is contentment and experience it. And you get up in the morning and hold it throughout the day. And it's the idea that Rudy was teaching us in Shun is be independent of what happens to us throughout the day, not let it control our state of consciousness.